This is the Icon Podcast, a community of trained readers reflecting Jesus with Michael Burns and Jason Alexander. I'm your host, Gian Hearn, and today we are without Jason Alexander. It'll just be Michael and G.
How disappointing, but we will soldier on.
The dos amigos.
That's right. Yes, and Gianna, I have two things I want to mention today, and they both involve you.
Oh, so I like that.
Yeah, I figured you would. Our universe today revolves around you, because first of all, today is a very special day because it is Gianna. What is it?
My birthday.
Your birthday.
It is my day.
Happy birthday.
Day.
Are you 40 now? Is that
really? Is that where? No, we're pressing end right now. We're done for the day. No, I am the big 3-3, and I have to admit, this is the first birthday I felt like, I could have skipped celebrating this one. Like, it's not a really great birthday. It's not a cool number. You just feel like, yep, I'm getting older. Woke up with like a numb right arm, like slept on it wrong.
And oh yeah, that sounds about right.
Sounds like I'm headed into my mid-30s.
33 is a cool number, though. That's, you know, 33. Double tray.
It's okay. But it did get a little sweeter this morning because, you know, I came out of the room, Reggie had the baby, and he was like, oh, look, she messed something up on the TV. And I look, and I don't know why that's his voice when I mimic him, because that sounds nothing like him. But I look on the TV. He had put together this slideshow video of something he put together with him and Z from earlier in the week that I went off to work for a day in Vegas. So he had the baby the whole day, and they put together this whole spiel. Because you know Reggie, Michael. He goes all out. And so he made a really cool video at one of our local outdoor malls and went to like certain shops that have specific names that represent something about me, and then had Z say something or not, just hold their pacifier. But it was really cool. So that's how I started my day. And you know, we're not celebrating too much because we have a lot of work today, but we do have some really cool things planned on the weekend.
Nice.
I'm excited about.
I do understand though, because when you're younger, like, you're so excited about your birthday. And then you kind of go in this lull for many years where, at least for me, I'm like, I don't even mention it. I don't think about it. In fact, I think this year somebody was like, oh, happy birthday. And I was like, oh, it's my birthday. I hadn't even thought about it. But then I do feel like there's going to be a certain point where you get to an age where you're like, yay, I'm happy to be alive, you know? And so then you start celebrating your birthday again. Like, can't believe I made it this far. I'm not sure when that age is. Like, maybe it's 70 or something.
I don't know.
Yeah. Thank you. I will let you know. Yes.
No, I did. Oddly enough, though, I woke up a few times in the middle of the night and then in the morning, and like my initial instinct was to start praying and like be really grateful for like making it to this age. And I think just because I've seen a lot of people have a lot of real life struggles medically recently, and I'm like, and I just got over COVID, and I was like, you know, instead of just being a complete downer, I'm just like, I have another year of life to spend with my family, to be a mom, have influence on my daughter. And I'm grateful for that, because that doesn't always happen. So I'm grateful for that.
That is beautiful. Now, before we start, the second thing is that I wanted to highlight was big milestone happened recently, which you know, but you don't know what I'm talking about.
Does it have to do with this podcast and how many episodes I've been on?
Oh, okay. No. Although it's probably coming up on like 75 for you or
something. Yeah, something.
But no, somebody that we mutually know started walking recently.
Oh, yes. We mutually know, and I know her very well. yeah, Zariah started walking, crazily enough. You know, we've been, for like a month, she's been like towing the line. We're like, come on, just do it. And so the other night, she's cruising around our furniture, our couches. And then Reggie and I were just looking at each other. And then all of a sudden, she just steps off, and we have a very wide open living room. And she just walked to the living room. And Reggie and I are just staring at each other like, oh. And we're trying not to make noise, because when she gets startled, she like falls or she gets scared. So we were just trying to like get each other's attention without saying anything loud. But Yeah, now we're in the phase of chasing around a toddler.
I was going to say, you're going to regret it. Every parent like wants their kid to walk, and then when they get mobile, they're like, oh, I deeply regret doing this.
And it's really hard for us since we travel like half a week all the time. Like now thinking about her going to the airport tomorrow when we fly, I'm like, oh.
Ooh, are you one of those? Would you get the little wrist leash thing?
The leash. Okay, look. I have questions about this because I was always one of those people that were like, I would never do that. And we're getting prepared to go to Disney World in December. And I'm like, should we get a leash? Is that weird? I don't think I'm going to. But I understand it a little bit more why you might. I just think there might be other ways. But
Hey,
who knows? I don't want to lose my kid at Disney World.
I mean, I think if you want to get the little wrist leash or whatever, it's fine. You know, I'd probably draw the line at like a prong collar around the neck or something, you know,
yeah,
where you can sort of snap it and correct them like you do with a dog if they wander off. You might not want to do that, but like a little chest harness or the little wrist thing. We never did that, but I don't know if I had daughters, I may have. And some people probably get mad at me for that. Like, oh, you're thinking differently about your boys and a girl. Like, yeah, sorry, guilty as charged. But so I don't know.
Yeah.
But, you know, have fun with that and don't feel bad if you change your mind.
I'll keep you updated on it for sure.
All right.
But yes, thank you for pointing those two things out. My birthday and my baby girl. Lots of life changes happening here in the Hearn household. Any updates with you, Michael?
No, my life just goes on monotonously. Actually, we just had a great week in Minnesota, went back and, hung out with our two boys for the week. And we went to a couple of Elijah's games as the college season's beginning and all that. And then we drove over to Wisconsin to see some family and all that. And then, flew back here. And I was so happy because while we were there in Minnesota and Wisconsin, you know, it's mid-November. It could easily be snow covered and all of that. But it was like 55 to 60 degrees for a high the whole time we were there. Best case scenario for that time of year. So I cannot complain 1 ounce.
Well, you know, I listened to all of that, but the first thing I heard was, you know, my life is just monotonous. And I was like, we need to get monotonous Michael shirts made and like have you looking just dreary or aloof. I don't know.
I'm fine with being compared to Eeyore. I get it.
I actually love Eeyore.
Yeah.
That's like my favorite Winnie the Pooh character. Yeah. Maybe that's why we're friends. All right. Thanks for the life update. So we're rounding out talking about Revelation. That's what this episode is.
We're bringing it in for a landing. You know, at the beginning, we said we more wanted to provide some keys and some markers along the way for people to dig in. We didn't really go through it, you know, verse by verse or chapter by chapter, which believe me, I've definitely been tempted to. And the more we go, it's like, you know what, let's just take another half a year and go through it all. But I hope that we've offered enough, you know, markers along the way that people feel a little more capable of digging in, at least getting the broad themes, at least avoiding some poorer readings of Revelation and moving toward more towards a faithful Revelation. Now, Gianna, I know when we began the book, you were kind of like, yeah, never really read it. A little bit scary. Didn't feel like I knew how to handle it. So I just stayed away from it. What are your impressions of it now? Has this helped at all as we've gone along the way to sort of demystifying it a bit?
I think it definitely made it less scary or less like, oh, this is going to be such a feat to tackle. I think what it did was lay a really good framework for understanding, like you said, some of those bigger themes so that when I dig deeper, I can, you know, understand a little bit better, because I feel like if I would have just started off on my own, I would have probably been really lost, or I would have just made my own assumptions that I think many people have fallen into, and it's very easy to just because you're unaware. So, you know, I think some of those broader themes really help in the starting of understanding Revelation.
Yeah, I think if you, you know, a couple of keys, even like if you understand going in, knowing that apocalyptic is symbolic, that numbers are always going to be symbolic, that, you know, and some of the key things like a beast is always going back to the Old Testament, is always empire or nations. It's not specifically a person. It can be characterized by a person, a leader. But, you know, just knowing that beasts are nations and, you know, some of those broad symbols, you start to get more of a flavor for, oh, okay, I see what's going on here. Are you left with any like big impressions or takeaways or even questions that still remain in the mental stew of your brain as we come in for a landing?
I can't say like anything crazy, but I think it is somewhat comforting and somewhat a little uneasy to know that the beast represents nations, and that, like, me thinking about it now, like, what does it mean now? And I know as we studied this out, we talked about not knowing, like, you know, it's not necessarily about, you know, the time and place, like when exact things are happening, like Revelation is not telling us all these things, but it does still make me wonder, like, okay, what's the next nation? What's going to fall? Are we a part of that? And how do I, even if I was living in that nation, or I know other people living in a nation like that, how do I pray for them? What should I think about? Like, I don't know. So that's where my head gets wrapped up in, because I can see a lot of similarities in the previous nations that would be characterized as the beast, and maybe what that looks like today. So I think if the point is, when you start to recognize those things, then what? Now what do we do? So that's a little bit of where I'm at.
Yeah. No, that's really good. So I have at least six things that I wrote down. I wasn't trying to make a comprehensive list. I just wanted to kind of free flow thinking, like, what are the things that stand out to me a little bit? And then maybe I'll throw these out and see if you have any thoughts on them. The first one that jumps out, I mean, some of them are narrow and some of them are more broadly encompass the larger themes of the book or wrestling with those. But my first one is that God will confront empire wherever and whatever form it's found. And I think although the beast, the image of the beast is empire, it is nations, the dynamics of empire can be found anywhere, right? And so, you know, kind of to your point, rather than worrying about, oh, when's the next beast going to rise? When is the next empire? It's kind of like we had that one episode where we looked at John as he talked about the false Christs, and he calls them the antichrists, and he's like, they're here and they're now and they're coming and there's many and they're all around, so keep your eye out for them. I think the same of empire, of beasts. It's not like the dragon just picks one every few hundred years and, oh no, is this one? It's dynamics that are almost on a spectrum that you can find in any organization. It can be a country, but you can find it in your, you know, local,
in your marriage,
in your marriage, in your church, in your homeowners association, you know, whatever it may be. But God will confront empire, in time, and often through the same means that empire uses to build up its strength and the promises that it makes, it can't deliver on long term and will fall at those very points. We'll get into that more in a little bit.
If I could add real quick, please. I think, you know, explaining it that way, what it does is takes away the drama, like, of it all. Like, I think leading into or starting to begin Revelation, that was always the thing. It's like, oh, it's this so, like, big thing. It's so dramatized because of the type of how, like, the way it was written and all that. But I'm like, it's not that dramatic. Like, obviously, it has a lot at stake, but the dramatization of it that I thought was going to happen, it just seems more a matter of a fact the way you're describing it than like this high, everything's building, and this huge, I don't know. It's less now. It feels more palatable, and I don't know if that makes sense. For me, at least.
No, it does. I think that's right. I was reviewing several books yesterday on Revelation, just kind of thinking through this. And now I don't remember which one I saw it in, but in one of the books I had underlined, and it said, basically, if the reading that you're using or utilizing in Revelation leads to fear or anxiety, then you're probably reading it wrongly. You know,
that makes sense.
I'm putting that in my own words, but basically, like, it shouldn't lead to fear. And I think it's only so open to that because it uses a technique, a genre of literature that's so foreign to us that it can be so easily filled in with other things, right?
Yeah.
But I think to finish this first thought, you know, God will mete out justice. He will confront empire. But what jumps out at me about that is there's scenes in Revelation where we see the martyred saints, those who will fall at the hand of empire, representing a deep concern for justice. They recognize that God is the one that will confront empire. That's not our job to tear it down, to, you know, rebel against it, overthrow it. But you do see them depicted going, God, how long? When are you going to confront empire? And in a world where it's become a religious environment, where it's become increasingly acceptable to question the idea of justice and consider it a distraction of the gospel. And while I do concede that there are some worldly ideas of justice that can be brought into the minds of faithful people, and we get a misunderstanding sometimes of what justice is, but biblical justice, and it's not just confronting wrongdoers, but it's setting the world to rights, living out now the way the world is supposed to be, being the new creation, that does matter to God. And it is on the mind of the saints. And so we do see them having a concern for justice. So I think that helps reorient me with that, you know, as we start to think about, you mentioned this, well, what now? In light of Revelation, how do we now live? That, you know, we start thinking in those terms. The second one that jumps out at me is, and this is maybe on the more national scale, the big beast or the capital B or something, and maybe there's smaller beasts with a small B. I'm just inventing that idea right now. But one of the clear marks of empire is when the civic religion, the economics, and the politics become intertwined. That's always a bad sign when they get mixed together. You see that in Rome. You've seen that in different places at different times. I suppose it always takes place in most nations to some degree, But when they really get wrapped up, and when particularly politics start becoming the religion, the indistinguishable from the civic religion of the nation or the people, you are bound for trouble. And that is a concerning sign to me in our present situation, where I do see that increasingly it looks like politics have become the religion of our nation. We have, you know, the kind of division that we usually see in religious rhetoric. It's now politics. It's, you know, there's no room for heresy. If you don't completely agree with my politics, you are an evil person and you are outside of, you know, the realm of insiders and all of that sort of thing. So I think that's something to be aware of and keep an eye on. Any thoughts on that one, G?
No, I think that is what I was feeling, which you just explained. Definitely going to keep my eye on it.
Nice. Sorry, I just looked over and your husband is texting me while we're recording. So thank you.
That's interesting.
Yes.
I'm looking right at him too. He's across from me.
No, we're finalizing the details because we're recording a Patreon episode later. That
slight plug
hasn't even, I don't think we mentioned it yet, what's coming next year, but we do have some a couple of cool things coming up next year, so
stay tuned.
Yeah, so we're just recording some of those early so we have a collection of them that we can kind of drop at once. So where were we? Number three. I said six. I realize I think I might have seven, but
that makes sense.
Yeah.
For you.
Especially with Revelation, you got to have seven. That is the number of completeness. So there you go. Now I found this interesting in a sense, in that, well, we do see the Bible speaking out in judgment against other empires. There's not really any other complete biblical polemic exposing an empire and the dynamics of it the way that John does with Rome. And of course, as we've talked about, it's not just Rome. He's looking back and saying, hey, we've seen this before, we'll see it again. But Rome does seem to be the unique sort of encapsulation of all of this. Daniel seems to be pointing ahead to Rome. John is like, it is here in all its full lack of glory.
So the natural question is why?
Yes, that's it. And I think it's because many of the other empires, there was no blurring of the lines. God's people were like, yeah, they're bad. That's empire. They're crushing us, Israel, or whatever it was at the time. But we see in Rome, I think John really went after it because there was a blurring of the lines. Like, maybe Rome's not so bad. Maybe Rome is God's vehicle. Maybe this is how it's going to go, that Rome can be the shape of the kingdom of God. And we see Christians starting to participate in the system without discernment. And so John is like, we need to expose this. We need to show the true shape and form and cause and function of this beast and learn from it, so that when it happens again, you will see it. And so I think that's particularly helpful in a time where maybe, you know, it's easy to start to blur those lines once again and think like, oh, maybe I live in a great country, which I'm not saying countries can't. I think countries can be great in some ways, and we can be very grateful to God that we live in, you know, one place and not another place or whatever. But we have to be careful that we don't start to blur those lines. And I've seen that happen in American history, where we start to think of the kingdom of God as synonymous with the United States of America. Mm-hmm. And then like things like, well, whenever we go to war, well, we know we're the good guys because we're one nation under God. So we're the godly people here. And that can get really bad really fast. And so being aware of that dynamic, I think, is very helpful from the book of Revelation.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it would just make sense with other things in the Bible about individuals being careful lest you fall, like not thinking that we've got it all put together and that we don't have, you know, sin ourselves, thinking, you know, then I would always think I'm right in my marriage for sure.
Right.
You know, and I can do no wrong because I am God's chosen wife of Reggie Hearn.
Yes. And he's so lucky to have you.
He is.
Yeah. Yeah.
We are lucky together.
No, but I think just being open to different perspectives too. I've talked about this before, but I'll never forget years ago when a disciple of Jesus from another country came up to me and said, "Can I ask you a question?" And we were in their country, different continent. And I said, "Yeah." And they said, "Is it difficult to follow Jesus and live in such an evil nation?"
Wow.
And my first reaction was like, "Wait, what? What?
Evil?
No, you've got this all wrong. We're the good guys." And then I thought, okay, well, I don't necessarily agree with all of your perspective. It's a perspective that I need to consider from the standpoint of being a Christian. Mm-hmm. And you see how easy it is to go, no, we're good. We're godly. We're, you know, and it's like, oh, wait, maybe there is a different way to view this. And that's one of the things that Empire does. Revelation 17 and 18, I think, really make that clear, is that Empire enriches itself so that all the citizens of that empire are like, woohoo, this is the greatest ever, such a blessing. We're so blessed and rich and this and that. But on the underside of it, Empire enriches itself while it crushes everyone else. And so when there's these other voices going, hey, maybe there's a different way to look at this, we should be open, I think, as followers of Jesus, to listen to that voice. And I've got a point in a few, my last one, that'll make sense of why I think that's particularly important as well. So
I think it's just interesting to, when you sit and think about, you know, what is my worldview, because it will affect how you read Revelation and the Bible in general. That's one thing I've noticed in just my own ponderings and really scrolling through social media. A lot of what I do is on social media. So I see a lot of Christian influencers, is what they call them, and how they speak to their communities and their listeners. And I always question and wonder, you know, what is their worldview here? Because, you know, there's many different voices out there. And so I always ask that of myself, like, what is my worldview coming into Revelation? Because I'm pretty sure it will have some type of influence on how I'm understanding it. And so when you run into someone like you did that questioned you and where you come from a little bit, I think it's great advice to tell us to take a pause and maybe hear what they have to say. Because if your worldview is never challenged, then it's just your view.
Right. And that's so much of the problem today, is that we've created these bubbles where our worldview is never challenged and we don't hear.
And shouldn't be challenged. God forbid you challenge it.
Right. Like, that's violence to challenge my worldview. Yeah. And in fact, we need that, especially as followers of Jesus.
Yeah. And I mean, not taking us off track, but I feel like that's all Jesus did, was challenge the Jews' worldview as he, you know, took his disciples along. It was like, well, here you go, Peter. You're going to have to talk to these Gentiles. You good? All right. Yeah. I'm going to challenge some things. But yeah, next point.
Yes. So I was thinking about the four horsemen.
Okay.
We didn't talk a ton about the four horsemen. We did a little bit. But I'm kind of like mildly obsessed with that whole imagery. like to the point, you know, I've got a few tattoos. I actually want to finish off my left arm sleeve with like the four horsemen wrapping around my arm and stuff.
Conversation piece.
Yeah. And kind of a reminder, which I get, there's sort of a negative image in a sense, you know? So it's like, why do you have the four horsemen on there? It's like, well, you know, it's a reminder. And I think the reminder of the four horsemen is that, and we've kind of touched on this point before, but it just stands out in my mind, is that empires promise things. And the main dynamic of empire is always power over others, strength, might, you know, that sort of thing. It promises to get things done. It promises to keep us safe and comfortable and all that stuff. But it will always bend back in on itself. So if you trust in power, you will fall to power. And the things that empire says it can keep us safe from, military conflict, internal conflict, it'll keep peace, you know, to keep the economy going, protect life and, you know, safety and all of that. When we look at the four horsemen, what's being unleashed on the empire is those very things that it says we can keep you safe from. So you have the white horse, which represents, we're told, international military conflict, war. And then the red horse comes and it's civil war and internal conflict and being ripped apart from inside. The black horse is economic ruin. And, you know, the empire exploits, especially the poor and the vulnerable, but now that starts to implode on itself. And then the pale green horse is the value of life and protection of life and safety. And so, and diseases and all of these things, it all sort of starts to implode on empire. And that's one of the primary ways that God confronts empire, is all the things that you promise will be shown that you can't actually protect from those things. And actually the brief little time you were protecting people from it, empire is often doing it by inflicting that on other people outside of the borders, but that's going to come back to haunt you.
It's not unlike what we saw with Pharaoh. Like, that's immediately what it brings me to.
Correct.
The plagues that were brought against him were the things that he was, you know, had power over, or was bringing, it was profitable to his land and people, and God confronted it all.
Yes. And each one of those plagues is a shot at a god of Egypt. You know, the things that, oh, this god will keep us safe from this. Yeah. And God's like, eh, no, it won't. No, it won't. But even on a smaller scale, you know, the person who leads through intimidation and power, that's going to come back and bite them. They're going to, you know, it's going to come around. It's going to get them. You know, somebody who marginalizes people and tries to step on people, they'll often fall to that same dynamic. And that's the way the dynamics of empire work. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's oddly comforting. Like, if there's anything, there's some comfort in just knowing, because when you are someone that likes fairness or justice, like, you want to see it tangibly right now. And we want that from God, but trusting in something like what you just said, you know, I think that's where the comfort comes from, that it will be confronted. It will be addressed even at the smallest level.
Well, I think that's an important message of the revelation. The other one, the next one, I actually want to just set up and then read this, not real long quote, but somewhat extended. Because I think there's a challenge from Revelation to be an alternate shaped people, right? To be the people of the Lamb rather than the beast. And I can't sum this up better than this section. I'm reading from Unveiling Empire, Revelation, Reading Revelation Then and Now by Wes Howard Brook and Anthony Gwither. I hope I'm pronouncing that last name right. I don't know, Gwither or Gwither. I'm not sure. I've not heard the name said, so I'm guessing. But here we go. It says, We saw in chapter 3 the many ways in which Asian Christians would be tempted and pressured to participate in Rome's seductive attractions. How were they to attempt to live Revelation's radical alternative from within their urban settings? As preposterous as it may sound, fidelity to the apocalyptic good news called for the creation of an entire parallel social universe. It took the form that Greeks called ekklesia, and which we have come to call church. Our diluted expectations of the role of churches as comprising alternative worlds have frequently closed off our imaginations to the possibilities that John's visions anticipated. Just as Paul refers to his fellow Christians with the radical titles of brother and sister, thus declaring them to be family, John's vision expects the ecclesia to be the place in which a new government is born. The Greek ecclesia was an assembly, a coming together of people for political purposes. So too, the Christian ecclesia was expected to be the foundation for community life based on the principles expressed in the New Jerusalem's vision. This meant that all would participate with equal status and with mutual respect, regardless of gender, race, nationality, or other imperial marks of status. It is one of the tragic ironies of history that this process was reversed with the conversion of the Roman Emperor Constantine in the 4th century. With Constantine, the ecclesia largely took on the shape of Imperial Rome, a form that it continues to bear today in its hierarchy and decision-making process. And yet, for those willing to lift the veil, John's vision remains bright and hope-filled as presenting the possibilities for an alternative political structure. And I just love that quote.
Yeah, like there was so much in there. It's hard to respond to it because it's like kind of mind-blowing how precise and clearly communicated that thought was.
Yeah, it's really good. And it's he said in like three paragraphs what we've taken like 15 episodes
right?
to try to get across. But
that's what I'm saying. Wow, that was very clear.
And it makes me think of Revelation 11:15, where we see the seventh angel sounding the trumpet, and there were loud voices in heaven which said, "The kingdom of the world has become the kingdom of our Lord and of his Messiah, and he will reign forever and ever." And I don't think that's what it's saying. Is it's not pointing to some moment where we finally overthrow all empires and take over, and now it's the kingdom of God as though they're in battle. But it's when God's people recognize all of this and become lamb-shaped, become cross-shaped, then the kingdom of the world in that setting has become the kingdom of the Lord and Messiah. And that's what Revelation is calling us to, is to transform ourselves from the dynamics of empire into the dynamics of the cross. And that's a challenge. It's not clear or easy, but it is exciting in many respects as well. Challenging and exciting and scary all at once.
Yeah, it seems like my faith. No, exciting mostly, but Revelation is pushing you to look at some things for sure that may be hard to face or just make it more challenging to figure out which direction. I don't know if more challenging, but it definitely makes you, I can't even think of the words. Just gives me some like pause to like sit longer, think deeper, make more of an effort to like go in this way that seems hard and somewhat unobtainable in this world.
I think that's a perfect response. I think that's what John would want, is like, I don't want you to race through this. I want you to sit with this, discern this. Think about the meaning of this, wrestle with it. And there's a few times in Revelation where John will say, you know, something along the lines of, let the reader calculate, or the discerning reader can figure this out. And it's kind of like he's saying, like, you know this stuff. If you stop and think about it, you'll see it. Mm-hmm. It's not unseeable. It's not something, hey, this is going to happen 2,000 years down the road and somebody then will figure out. It's like, you know this stuff if you stop and think about it and let it retrain our imaginations. That's maybe the thought I'm really obsessed with lately is like, how do we retrain our imaginations to see a new world of possibilities? Because we're limited by our imagination. You know, we just are. In fact, I've been doing this illustration. I've done it probably 3 or 4 times in the last month or two as an illustration. And I take this Ziploc bag that is just completely full of water, just to the point of almost bursting. And I talk about, now, is there any way that we could poke a significant sized hole in this bag and not have the water gush out? And you're like, no, there's, I'm like, no trick, nothing like that. Can you poke a hole in it and water not rush out? And of course you'd be like, I don't think so. I don't think there's a way to do that. But if I take a sharpened pencil and you can just right through and then leave it in there, and there's now actually 2 holes, but no water comes out. And I'm like, see, you didn't think about that. But now all of a sudden you can poke another pencil through, and I poke it through the bag. And it's like, see, once your imagination has been reshaped, you start to go, oh, there is a way to do this. And I think as readers of Revelation, mm-hmm. it's like, man, the dynamics of empire are so pervasive and they're so big and it's so all encompassing. What could we possibly do? How can we even escape? How could we become an alternate sort of people? And Revelation is trying to reshape our imagination to be like, no, there is a way to do this. It's hard. It's sacrificial, but that is what the way of the Lamb is all about. And that's what I hope we can, as Christians, really together start exploring down the road.
I have 2 things for you.
All right.
One, so you actually poked a pencil through this bag.
Yes. In fact, at
and
one
have
time.
Have you had just, any mess ups?
No. One time I did it. The first time I did it, actually, I had this teenage girl stand underneath the bag just to emphasize.
Oh.
She wasn't very excited about it, but yeah. She was a good sport. The only time I kind of had a mess up is we were in San Diego recently, and I forgot to bring the Ziploc bags. And so I was going to walk like 2 miles to this store to get bags on Sunday morning. And then my wife, who's much smarter than I am, was like, cause I didn't want to bother the people we were staying with and all that. So I was like, oh, I'll just get up early and walk there. And she's like, why don't I just Instacart it here? And so she did. And she ordered Ziploc bags, but the Instacart person got like, instead of the quart bags, I think they got like the gallon size bags. So it was really big. So when I put the pencil through it, it worked. But then I had this pie tin and I set it in the pie tin, you know, so it would just sit there, because eventually it'll start to drip, you know, from where the pencil is. But I'm just trying to make a point. But when I did that, I handed it to my wife because she was on stage with me. And so when I set the bag down, it was big enough that the pencil came out of one of the holes.
Bursting.
And then it just started like shoot water everywhere on my wife and on stage. And she was like, oh, oh, oh. And so then she ran off with it and took care of it.
I so love that, demonstrations. Yeah. You know, I try to pay attention to what you guys are saying, but like, I'm always looking for the flaw. Like, is the bag going to break? I'm just waiting for you to mess up.
Well, and I always say, don't do a demonstration that you haven't tried before.
Yeah.
And I had tried that one. I'd done it several times already. And I even tried it that morning with the big bag and it worked, but I never went through the process of then setting the bag down.
That makes sense.
Afterwards. So,
well,
yeah,
that's so, kind of my funny. I said I had 2 things. The second,
yes.
Do you have an example of where you've seen like an organization, a person's life, where it's really actually changed what it's calling for here in Revelation, what we're talking about, where the kingdom is represented well? Do you have an example of that now?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I've seen places like that all over the place. And we've even had some of them on the podcast way back in the past. I think of these two young men who are amazing young men. And one of them died tragically very young, about a year or so ago. But they started this group in Chicago called Alt Space Chicago, where they work with, it's hard to even explain what they do. It's so kind of cool and revolutionary, but basically they take spaces in the city that are blight and empty, and they get sponsors and they go down and make them very beautiful spaces with art and things like that. And then they make materials available to homeless people, but they can come in and shop, but in an almost kind of upscale sort of art, you know, very beautiful space. And they do a lot more than that, but that's kind of their thing. And then I think of like, there's this group One Day at a Time in Philadelphia. ODAT is the acronym. And they do so amazing, so many amazing things with people who are caught in addiction, and they buy up homes and they help these people, like real true help. They're kind of flipping around society in a lot of ways, and they work with the church, the Greater Philadelphia Church of Christ there, and it's a great partnership. But ODAT is, I mean, their success rate of helping people with addiction is just off the charts, and it's holistic and it's beautiful. And there, you know, there are so many other examples we've seen in southern Africa, particularly in like Durban and some other places, but like the church in Durban, they've done this amazing thing where they've bought up old railroad like crates, cars, I don't know what you call them, and they've transitioned them to toy libraries. And they get permission and they put them in some of the poorest, you know, areas and neighborhoods where kids maybe don't even have toys. And they allow them to come in and play and make it a community space where that's just not available. You know, and then there are so many things that churches are doing directly and things like that. But I think of things like that where you're really becoming an alternate world and society. I've seen churches do that. We had on a couple of years ago the Potomac Valley Church in Virginia. They're just doing so many kind of alternate community things that I see them on social media all the time, and I'm like, wow, I love some of the things that they're doing. So I wasn't prepared for that question, so I can't give you the best answer with like here's and specifics, but that's kind of what pops off of my mind. But what a great question.
Yeah, the point and what I'm trying to get to is an encouragement here that, you know, maybe it seems hard and to obtain or to do, but it's happening. People are trying to do it every day, and right here in our communities, in our country, and around the world. So, you know, for someone like me, because I'm Reggie would say, you know, I'm a pessimist. I'm pretty negative.
Me too.
It's good for me to have those reminders of people are really dedicating their lifestyle, their hearts to these type of things and to bringing about an alternate society. And that means that I can do it too in my own ways.
Yeah. No, I love that. And actually, as I think about it, I don't know if I'm a pessimist. I'm a weird combination of, I critique things. I see the problems with things, but I'm also kind of an optimist. So, but I'll be like, well, the problem is here are all the problems. Here are all the problems. I believe we can fix them, but I just see all of them.
See, you know? I'm more of a realist, I would say. I don't think I'm a pessimist. I feel like I'm just factual. Like these are just the facts.
Right.
They change, this is the situation. But yeah. I'm not like, oh, it's going to be this way forever.
What was that voice, by the way? Was
I don't know. You never know what you're going to get when it comes like to making voice. Voices.
You do have to work on your Reggie impersonation, though. But
Yeah, we'll see. I might just leave them the way I do it. But any more points?
Two quick ones. One is, a key message, I think, from this book is to resist the dynamics of empire. I don't know that we need to talk a lot about that because I feel like we already have, but whether it's a political level, an organizational level, or even a personal level in my own life is to resist those dynamics of empire, to see them, to see where they take root, and not a sense of like, oh, I've got to tear this down and run away from it and get away from it. You know, if I see the dynamics of empire in my church, I don't think my reaction that Revelation is calling me to is to be like, oh, this church is now the beast and I'm leaving. It's to say, oh no, we have to confront this, and we have to like figure out lovingly how to keep taking this on. And I get that might get you to a point where if an organization just doesn't want to see it, you know, then you're like, well, I don't know what else to do. And you might have to make some hard decisions there. But I think it's a constant labor to recognize and transform those things, and to recognize that there will always be elements of empire. We're just trying to deal with them and transform until such time as Christ returns and wipes out all the stoicheia and principles and powers and authorities of the world. The last one is just a reminder that this book isn't about predicting the future. It's not a calendarizing thing. What it talks about is certain, though, in the sense that we will live in the midst of empire. No matter where you live, there will be the dynamics of it. You may not live in the biggest, baddest empire in the world, the biggest beast at the time, but we will always live in the midst of it. And Revelation is a handbook for God's people of how to live in the midst of Babylon, or as Scott McKnight calls it, for dissidents. It's a manual for dissidents. And I think the last point there then is we're to side with the victims of empire and not empire. And that's really important to remember, that Revelation points to the vulnerable, and that we're to stand with them. That's the whole point of the Lamb, is to protect people from empire at the risk of our own comfort, security, and lives, rather than buying into the comfort of empire and then contributing to the masquerade that it is good and that it is what God wants. So we have to look at the shape of things. Is it shaped like the beast, like empire, or is it shaped like the Lamb and the cross? And those are my thoughts from the book of Revelation.
Complete. It is done. 7 points.
It is finished. Yes.
Yes.
At least for what my little brain can comprehend from that. There's a lot more there, obviously, but those are the things that stood out to me.
Well, that's a good starting point, and I think even more than a starting point, really giving people some things to think about as they go through Revelation. So thanks everybody for joining us as we went through Revelation in this series with Jason, Michael, and myself. And, you know, we'd love to hear your thoughts. What were your lasting impressions out of this series? Send us an email or even comment on Facebook. But Michael, anything you want to point us ahead to? What's coming next?
Well, you know, I think we're going to keep that a secret where we're going next. I think we have an idea, but we're not 1,000% sure yet. But I will. Oh, okay. I'll give a couple little teasers of what we do have coming next year, starting in 2024. One is a Patreon series that we're doing with Mr. Gianna Hearn, Reggie Hearn,
yeah,
and J. Brian Craig from Los Angeles, California. And we are doing a series of conversations called The Misfits. Mm. And we're talking about surviving in a church culture, an extroverted church culture, when you're an introvert, or dealing with depression or mental health issues or things of that nature. And we're just having chats and sharing our own experiences and figuring out what that's like and the challenges of that, and how churches can embrace those who feel like misfits. And then I'm very excited about this. We're doing a few special episodes that we plan to drop like once a month called Tavani Thursdays, The Other Realm, I think is what we're going to call it. I reserve the right to change that title. But this is a really amazing brother who teaches God's word in a really unique and powerful way. He is from Zimbabwe, and he has a certain expertise in supernatural. Ooh. And the demonic and witchcraft and the occult. Ooh. And things like that. Ooh. So we, yeah,
I'm
boy.
I'm not sure I can handle it.
So we are having conversations about that. My great hope is that in 2024, he and I will be able to go live at some point from a certain region in Africa that is well known for witchcraft and the occult.
Fun.
Yeah, boy, that's my dream. I'm not sure if we're going to make that happen this year, but I have long been fascinated by understanding that realm. But we're trying to do it from a Christian perspective, not to like glorify those things, but to help people. It just seems like there are an increasing number, even in the Western world now, of people going, I got questions about demons and the demonic, and I feel like I've had experiences and I don't know what to do with it. And so we are bringing in somebody who has a whole lot of, because I have a lot of theoretical reading experience in that realm, but he's lived it.
Okay.
And so it's super fascinating. So we'll drop one of those a month or so. And that's all coming next year.
So we're taking a break at this point.
No, I think we may break. Well, we have to talk about that. We may break. You know, so if you're listening to this and you suddenly don't see us until next year, then you'll know why. But blame it on Jason.
We'll blame it on Jason. He's not here. We can blame him.
We've got to talk about if we want to take a break for the rest of the year. We may do that. I know schedules have been very crazy, but we will at least, I think I can promise this, we'll at least have one more episode this year where we do kind of our year in review and
book lists.
It's a tradition now. Yes. We have to do that. So
it's a tradition for me to ask Reggie what he's been reading and me share what he thinks is a good book and for you guys to share your list.
Correct.
Do you guys want to hear my prenatal book listings or my first year of mom life book list?
You know what? I bet we have some listeners who would love to hear that.
Well, sounds like the new year. We have a lot of stuff to look forward to, and we will wrap this year up in a special way with you guys. But if you want to communicate with us what you thought about Revelation, please do. Thanks for sticking with us through this. We'll catch you guys next time.